Live from Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruriak. CAL FIRE says it was purely coincidental that yesterday, while the new CEO for Pacific Gas and Electric, PG&E, was testifying in Sacramento, CAL FIRE announced that sparks from PG&E's power lines had started the fire that became the Camp Fire blaze last November. So the full report has been forwarded to the Butte County DA. The Camp Fire, as many of you know, destroyed the towns of Paradise and Concow. Magalia was heavily damaged. Polga had burn damage, too. 85 people died. More than 19,000 structures, most of them homes, were fully or partially burned. The CAL FIRE report is where we begin this week's Capitol Chat, and our Capitol Bureau Chief Ben Adler is standing by at the Capitol. Hi, Ben.
Purely coincidental that I'm here, Beth.
Yeah, they said that they just released the information to the public as soon as they have it, and that happened to be the timing. There are more details about this from CAL FIRE that I'd like to cover with you. One of them is the fact that the Butte County DA's office is now going to consider criminal charges, Ben, and that plays heavily into this big picture.
Sure. And PG&E has been found criminally negligent in the past and in past events, thinking about the gas explosion, the pipeline explosion in San Bruno some years ago. And this, of course, comes at a pivotal moment for PG&E. I mean, you've got so many different issues that it's facing, the bankruptcy court, the liability laws. A lot of questions also for fire victims who, you know, despite this news, I'm told that this report is not necessarily admissible. This investigation, these findings are not necessarily admissible in civil lawsuits for, say, the town of Paradise or for individual fire victims. They have to use evidence to prove themselves. They may bring in CAL FIRE to testify what it found, but it's not like you can take this report and immediately put it into the record and everyone stipulates that it's going to be considered. At least that's what I was told yesterday as I was doing some reporting on this. And so this doesn't solve everything for them. We don't know if all the money's still going to be available that they want because PG&E's got a lot of creditors in bankruptcy court. And we also don't know if this means that ratepayers will still need to foot the bill for the Camp Fire or if PG&E shareholders will.
So CAL FIRE tells me it's up to the DA's office to release the full report, which means there's not a guarantee that the public will ultimately see the entire investigation, Ben.
Yeah, that's a good question. It's not something I know. One would think that if one side's going to use it in court, that the other side would get to see all of it. It's not like it's not like the Mueller report here, perhaps at some point in the discovery process or in the legal proceedings, the whole report would become public. But that's getting far ahead of ourselves at this point.
There is an interesting detail to note that there was that ignition site initially where the sparks were lit under a power line. Then the investigation says there was a second nearby ignition site too. And so that first fire kind of engulfed the second fire. And these are small sparks that lit vegetation on fire. But I think because of the tragedy that it became, we're all glued to the exact specific details of how this unfolded because it grips so many people in so many ways in this area.
Yeah, and I guess there had been some disagreement and may still be over that second ignition point involving distribution lines. You had the transmission tower that was the first one that had been pretty widely reported on, and PG&E even kind of acknowledged it in filings, you know, previously that they believed they were responsible, and the CEO said yesterday to the legislature, I'd been assuming that we were responsible for that. The second ignition point, well, maybe, maybe not. PG&E said in its formal statement it is not yet ready to conclude, not yet ready to accept the findings that CAL FIRE had on the second ignition point. But it said it does accept the findings on the first ignition point.
So PG&E had filed for bankruptcy protection in January. In February is when it became probable that one of its transmission lines had sparked the blaze. And all of that is more background to why PG&E's new CEO, Bill Johnson, said what he did yesterday. And that testimony has made news everywhere, Ben.
Yeah, he's just been on the job a couple of weeks, which he fell back on frequently in defending or at least not answering every question the lawmakers threw at him. We'll hear from him in a moment. I just want to kind of set the scene for you yesterday. So there was this hearing at the Assembly Energy and Utilities Committee, and incredibly, not every lawmaker who's on the committee was there. That kind of shocked me, because if I were a lawmaker and I were on a committee and having a chance to question the CEO of PG&E at this moment in time, I mean, heck, if I were the governor, I might try to get up there and question the CEO in public. Mm. But for the first hour or so after this news broke, none of the lawmakers asked the CEO about this. It was like there was this weird bubble hovering over that hearing room. And finally, I guess some staff members must have texted their bosses, because finally we got a question or two. And here is when it was finally posed directly to the CEO, Bill Johnson, by the committee chair, Chris Holden, a Democrat from Southern California. Here is what Mr. Johnson said.
So I have made the assumption when I got here that PG&E equipment caused the fire. Just made the assumption because that's the best place to start. The company had said in its filings recently it was probable that their equipment caused the fire. So this is it's a disappointment that this happened. Let's not do it again.
That sounds awkward, Ben.
Yeah.
It's just my very personal reaction.
It was an awkward hearing, but the what was even more awkward is that the committee chair actually gave the CEO the option to not answer, maybe because he felt it was just, too soon, but I don't know. I mean, reporters would certainly not feel any qualms asking the CEO of PG&E for an answer in this situation.
Well, you think about a homeowner or a mayor or a contractor working in that area. I think if he was in front of a cross-section of people, anybody would step forward and ask the questions. So at least it was addressed in the hearing. I think if it hadn't been, can you imagine the way we'd be talking today?
Well, and sure. And to be fair, there were a lot of big issues being discussed about future solutions to this, because, look, there's a lot of anger toward PG&E, and it was reflected by the lawmakers on the dais. And at the same time, everyone knows that simply raising your fist and shaking it at PG&E isn't going to do anything to prevent the next wildfire, and isn't going to do anything to come up with the money and the funding structure to support the victims of the next wildfire. Because, whether or not everything is PG&E's fault or not, which PG&E would contest to some extent, but not necessarily they're clearly saying we know our equipment had a role in this. It's not yet clear whether they will be able to pass the cost on to ratepayers or if shareholders will have to do it. But these fires are happening. They're getting more and more costly. And no matter what California does, and they are trying to do some forest projects to prevent some other big wildfires, they're also looking at, liability funds that the state could have on hand, because these fires are still going to happen.
I am talking with Cap Radio's Capital Bureau Chief, Ben Adler. In this week's Capital Chat, we are talking about the announcement yesterday from CAL FIRE that PG&E's responsibility is confirmed in terms of the campfire starting. To what degree that is still somewhat undefined. In the reporting yesterday, Ben, it came from lawyer Mike Danko, this interesting point that CAL FIRE normally releases its reports publicly if, he says, it finds that no laws were broken, but the fact that the full report wasn't released suggests, at least to him, that PG&E might have been negligent on safety issues. And he represents 2,000 victims of the fire. He says it indicates maybe a law was broken. You talked to Paradise Mayor Jody Jones yesterday, Ben.
And she wasn't surprised at this finding, but I think it still brought some small measure of, if not closure, a step toward that closure.
So let's listen to what she had to say.
It's a relief to have some finality and to finally know for sure. And I'm hopeful that this will spur PG&E to negotiate in good faith with the town regarding our lawsuit and their bankruptcy and all of that.
So, Ben, if you want to add more about what she said, please do. But I also then want to get to what happens now legislatively, because the governor had been involved in this along the way, working with lawmakers in terms of, I guess, trying to keep PG&E upright instead of the state totally taking over the utility.
I think there's still some lawmakers who would like nothing more than to see PG&E crumble, split up. Some folks want it to become public. On the other hand, I don't think any policymaker wants it to become the state. All of these debts, these, you know, potentially $30 billion in liabilities, nobody wants them to become the state's problem. So, Governor Newsom wants some measure passed by July, I think, because we'll be getting into fire season. We'll already be in fire season by then. And that's also when lawmakers go on summer recess for a month. So there are some possibilities under consideration. There is, of course, what Governor Jerry Brown sought last year and what the electric utilities sought, which is a change to California's existing wildfire liability law known as inverse condemnation, where utilities, if their equipment caused the fire, then they are liable for it, whether or not they were negligent in the maintenance of that equipment. Utilities say that's not fair and that's not common in other states, and they're seeking a change. That's opposed by, you know, in the insurance industry, trial lawyers, victims groups, virtually everyone else, and there's no appetite to do that at the state capitol. But the reality is, if the money's not there, the money's not there. Other discussions are centering over a liability fund, you know, a high-risk pool of sorts, and it's a very complicated subject. I can't explain it well. I think it'd be ripe for a separate discussion on Insight with someone who can explain it well. And then there's a question of whether there would need to be a bridge fund created to kind of bridge the gap between now and if there is that liability fund set up whenever it's able to really start working. There's one last point I'd like to make, and I've mm-hmm. referred to it a little bit, but just to expound on it a bit. Just because PG&E equipment started the fire does not mean, I mean, it means the company is liable, but it does not automatically mean that their shareholders will have to pay for it. If PG&E is found to have done its due diligence and been prudent in maintaining the equipment in question here, then they would be able to pass the cost, these billions of dollars of cost, on to ratepayers, you and me and all of our listeners right now. If, on the other hand, PG&E is found that they did not, it is found that PG&E did not maintain this equipment, that's in theory when shareholders would need to be on the hook for it. But this isn't going to be decided for a long time, and there is not enough publicly available evidence yet for us to know whether this is the case or not. So perhaps the people affected the most by this these fires are the victims. They don't have any closure, and the millions of California ratepayers, no closure for them from yesterday's report yet either.
And I mentioned that there are lawsuits from the victims of the fire. I also want to note that Paradise as a city sued PG&E in January looking for damages for the loss of infrastructure, land, property, trees, public and natural resources, and included in that a loss of taxpayer resources. So there are layers and layers of litigation here. Meanwhile, Ben, what is the status of PG&E's request for a 6-month extension? Because that reorganization plan was due by the end of this month. What's happened with that?
So they did ask for the 6-month extension, and it's that request that got a reply from Governor Newsom yesterday, and he slammed it. He said, look, you know, you want to give him a little bit more time, okay, but giving him 6 months, there's no urgency there, and this is an urgent issue. And he said PG&E hasn't been doing what it needed to do to address safety and resiliency and customer service, and he did not mince words in his court filing yesterday, which, if you want to end on the coincidence that we began at, what are the odds that this document would be filed in court, the same, and this report would be released on the same day that at the same moments even, that the PG&E CEO was testifying in the state legislature.
Right. Right. Coincidence. All right, Ben. Thanks so much. That was a good Capital chat. There's a lot of information to get through, and we've posted a lot more online at capradio.org. Again, Ben Adler, thanks again.
Anytime.
And this is Insight. I do want to tell you that there are two stories from this week that we want to update. After yesterday's conversation about the arts budget debate in Sacramento, we received this statement from Tim Swanson in the city manager's office. He wrote, "Citizen input is critical to the budget process. The city of Sacramento encourages all residents to read the proposed budget and share their thoughts with city council members and staff. The city council currently is discussing the budget and is scheduled to vote on its adoption June 11th. So that will be a 5 p.m. Sacramento City Council meeting. Backing up to Tuesday and my conversation with Sacramento County Superintendent Dave Gordon about the budget crisis and potential receivership in the Sac City Unified School District, the update is that the latest interim budget will be presented tonight at a public board meeting. There were a few key points released yesterday. The district says just under $20 million, $19.67 million of district reserves will be needed to cover next year's expenditures, but the district has that money in reserve. Also, the more than $28 million in cuts and cost savings that have been adopted by the board so far this year have helped extend the date that a state takeover or receivership would be necessary. So the district says all of this amounts to buying some time to reach long-term cost savings through labor negotiations, and there has been a call from the state for all parties to get back to the table to negotiate. The Sac Unified Board meeting starts tonight at the Cerna Center at 6:30. There is a note here. The budget item isn't expected to be taken up until almost 8:30 tonight. So you can find more news about the meeting. You can also find a link to watch it live. That's at capradio.org. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.